Thank you for that incredibly warm introduction. That is not the worst way my name has been mispronounced. So that's I actually did a mock trial in college, which is a shout out to all the mock trial support here. And I was being introduced at this all-star round, and there was a woman from the University of Kentucky. Her name was Kimberly Taylor. And she was like, look, I really want to make sure I get your name right, so just tell me how you pronounce your name. And I said, it's Thiru Vignaraj. And she's like, oh, it's just how it's spelled. It's perfect. That's easy. She gets up there and she says, look, I'm really honored to introduce members of the jury, my co-counsel, Tarnu Varnagar. I'll be doing the opening, and then later the closing will be done by Themu Vignanunu. So a dropped consonant here and there, that's not a... you know, I am really honored to be here, and I am going to be a fun, funny guy who tells a very sad story. But before I do, I just want to do a little bit of an aside. The one person who raised their hand a moment ago, it almost felt like an April Fool's joke that my high school mock trial coach was here. Mr. Boyer, can you stand up for a minute? If he'd paid me the courtesy of telling me he was coming, this story would have been about him. Mr. Boyer was an inspiration at a school that had lots of challenges, and long before Serial made it famous as a place where murders happened, any number of other violent and terrible things happened at that school, and yet Mr. Boyer found a way to get the kids who wanted to do something with their lives all in one room. He led us in my 4 years to 2 county championships and 2 state finals, and at a place that graduated not as many people as it kicked out, that was quite a feat. And I just want to say, Mr. Boyer, it's such an honor. It really is such an honor to have you here. This obviously was incredibly impromptu that you're here, but long before I got a... you know, had the privilege of being editor of the Law Review or clerking on the Supreme Court, it was Mr. Boyer who taught me to love the law. So thank you. So every lawyer and certainly every prosecutor is taught early on never to guarantee the outcome of a case. I have broken that cardinal rule exactly once in my career. It was May of 2011 when a gang leader named Eric Avens was shot in Northeast Baltimore. He had gone down to break up a fight, because that's what gang leaders do, and in the course of that, he was shot. While he was on his way to the hospital to get treated and then recover, two of his henchmen, Donye Robinson and Derek Brown, went and got guns and looked to retaliate. They literally went hunting for the person they blamed for the shooting of their leader. So they went to a place called Cliffview Avenue, and they walked the streets of Cliffview once, and they didn't see Critic, the guy they were looking for. And so they walked around a second time, and they still didn't see him, but thought, we got to send a message. So they marched up to the first house on Cliffview Avenue that had people on it, and they pulled out their guns, and they started firing. It was a quadruple shooting. A 15-year-old boy was shot in the butt and survived. A 17-year-old boy was shot in the leg and in the arm, but recovered. Michael McDaniel was shot 9 times at virtually point-blank range. He was 19 years old, and he survived. But 12-year-old Sean Johnson wasn't so lucky. Sean was a perfect kid. These were all good kids growing up in a tough part of town. Sean was an honor student at his local middle school. He played football. His mom would tell you that he made curfew home every night. And in fact, that day, he had been playing basketball and then football, and he'd come by to his friends who served as older brothers, and he walked up to him at 9:45 and said, "What are you guys up to tonight?" And Michael said, "I don't know what we're up to, but I know what you're up to, which is you're going home." And so he was like, "All right," and he turned around. I don't know if he said it that way, but he turned around and started walking, and it was exactly at that moment that Danye Robinson and Derrick Brown walked up and started firing. And at point-blank range, they shot and killed Sean Johnson. He was a murder victim because he wanted to get home for curfew. The case went unsolved for months. No leads, nobody would talk, no breaks, no forensics, no witnesses. The three kids who were there and saw the shooters had never seen the shooters before. They didn't live in that world. They all graduated from high school. They all have jobs now. 6 to 9 months later, the case was transferred to the unit that I had the privilege of leading, and I took a special interest in this case. And at some point, we cracked the case. We cracked the case in part because we were able to flip that guy, Eric Avens. Mr. Avens was tragically sad about the fact that a 12-year-old boy had been killed in his name. He was an older gang leader. That was not the code that he had signed up for. And he remembered that when he was at the hospital getting treated, he heard over the police radio that another shooting victim was coming in. And he thought, oh, that must have been done for me. Cliffview Avenue, that's where Critic was. And he didn't think twice about it. They thought Critic would be rolled into the room next to him. He testified later that it was Sean Johnson who got brought into the same room as him. And months later, when we had a chance to confront him and we pieced it together, he decided to flip and tell us the story. It was not a particularly strong case. It was one of those cases that's a coin toss in a court of law. And I decided I would take on the case, and we sat down with the family, and we told them that we had found out who had done it. We were charging the case, and they were thrilled. And the prosecutor who was with me on the case did what every prosecutor is supposed to do. They said, look, this is a hard, tough case. It's going to be a long road. There's going to be postponements. And I could see them going from exhilarated that there might be some closure to despondent. And so I broke the rule that every prosecutor and every attorney is told that you don't promise anybody anything, and you certainly don't promise it in a case where you're not sure you can keep that promise. One of my most trusted interns, I told her to do this, walked into the room after we left and said, look, that guy will win you this trial. I promise. He'll make sure that you get a conviction. He'll make sure that you get closure. He'll make sure that you get justice. What felt like 10 minutes later, our star witness, Eric Avens, it was about a month later, went out and shot someone. In his defense, the person he shot was an underling of his, a guy named Wheezy, who had come up to him and pulled a gun and said, I know you're snitching on D and Ed. I ought to shoot you for that. And Eric Avens, who knows the code of the Black Gorilla family, said, show me the papers. Because on the streets, you actually have to have paperwork as evidence to show that you are, in fact, snitching. And Wheezy didn't have any papers, so he said, ah, shucks, I guess I don't have any papers, and he walked away. Avens went and got a gun, and within an hour, there's a grainy video of him in the passenger side seat of a car, sort of riding it cowboy style, and he's chasing Wheezy, shooting. So we have the grainy video, and we're pretty sure it's Avens, but we have nothing else. So we bring Avens in, and I find out that he's at the Northeast Police District at 10 o'clock at night, and I go out there, and he is very comfortable on tape telling us that Wheezy assaulted him, that he pulled a gun on him and he threatened him. And then we say, what happened next? And he says, well, I'll tell you, but I'm not telling you on tape. And then he confesses to what he does. And all of us realize that he has us over a barrel. This is the star witness, an incredibly high-profile, double, you know, quadruple shooting murder case. And we can't charge him when he just tells us off tape that he did it, and that's all the evidence that we have. So I call, and a couple of you guys know this person, my best intern. She was the editor-in-chief of the Law Review at University of Baltimore. And I say, look, we need a solution to this. I don't know what to do, but you got 15 minutes, come up with something. She calls me back, and she says, why don't you secretly record his confession? And I say, look, you can secretly record an investigation if there's a murder, but the guy he shot, Wheezy, survived. It's just an attempted murder, and the Maryland law doesn't cover that. And she says, yeah, but I read the statute, and at the very bottom, it says conspiracy to commit any of these crimes is something you can do a recording for. And we know that there was a driver in that car, so that counts as a conspiracy. And I thought, that's good enough for government work. And I remember thinking at that moment, if this works, for those of you who've seen Air Force One, there's a scene where Harrison Ford, who's the president, tries to fax an emergency note to the White House to let him know. And he says to the woman who comes up with the idea, if this works, I'm going to make you Postmaster General. So that intern is now one of our star prosecutors in Baltimore City because it worked. We had a captain go in and say, look, I want to hear your story. I haven't heard it before, and I want to put it on tape. And he tells the first half of the story. And then when he gets to what happened next, he says, turn off the tape. And he says, sure, no problem. He turns off the tape, and then he confesses to the shooting. What he didn't realize is that behind a photograph was another recording device that captured Eric Avens' confession. Eric Avens then was charged with the attempted murder, flipped again, was sentenced to 25 years, and testified against Danya Robinson and Derek Brown. They were convicted of first-degree murder of Sean Johnson. And I had the privilege of going out to dinner the night of the verdict with the family. You know, prosecutors want to celebrate something like that. It feels good to have gotten something. But it wasn't a celebration. There was a sense of closure. There was a sense of justice. But I remember thinking that we break a rule once in our career because it's the right thing to do. And I remember thinking that the burden of uncertainty was not something that that family needed to bear in that particular case. If I was wrong, I would have to go into them and apologize and tell them how terribly sorry I was. But for that window of time, that was not their burden to bear, it was mine. Now, if you try to bear that burden in every case, it will break your back. But once in a while, it feels worth it. And as Mr. Boyer told me and taught me a long time ago, that's what public service is. That's what it has been for me, and I hope it is for all of you. Thank you.